This is a book about books. To try that again, it is a book about my fatal flaw, that I insist on learning everything from books. I find myself wanting to apologize for my book's title, which, in addition to embarrassingly taking part in a ubiquitous publishing trend by including the word girls, seems to evince a lurid and cutesy complicity in the very brutality it critiques. If I can say one lame thing in my defense, it is that I wanted to call this book Dead Girls from the moment I realized I was writing it, in the spring of 2014. I wrote an essay on the finale of the first season of True Detective, trying to parse a category of TV I identified as the Dead Girl Show, with Twin Peaks as this genre's first and still most notable example. People seemed to like that essay, so I understood that Dead Girls were something I could hitch my wagon to. I'd moved to Los Angeles the previous summer, and I had been writing essays about that experience too, because it was the only interesting thing I had ever done. All of the Los Angeles essays in the second section of this book were written in my first year there, as I was still learning about the city and my place in it. A lot of what I was trying to reconcile in writing about Los Angeles was my incredibly unglamorous life there and the airbrush city as immortalized in movies, books, and reality TV shows. When I decided to move to California, I read Raymond Chandler and Joan Didion, believing completely in their vision of Los Angeles as a sprawling, neon-lit frontier town, populated by New West prospectors trying to strike it rich in the entertainment industry, haunted daily by the threat of various natural disasters. My first night in the city, I stayed in a cheap motel off Hollywood Boulevard that I later realized I had read about in a book, The Hollywood Downtowner, prominently featured in Karolina Václaviak's novel, How to Get into the Twin Palms. The overlap between my reading and my life in Los Angeles stopped there. I lived in Koreatown, whose culture Chandler and Didion do not account for at all. I rode the bus, worked in food service, and had no money or friends. When I look back on this period, the vision of LA I bought into so unquestioningly was incredibly white and male, regardless of the fact that it was advanced by Joan Didion. It is a point of view that flattens a city of diverse neighborhoods and enclaves to a hectic series of real estate developments conceived of and controlled by a few powerful men. Believing what I read more than my own eyes was only part of my problem, since I also did not read the right things. Take, for instance, this passage I quoted from Didion's essay, Pacific Distances, which describes the seductive sameness of LA neighborhoods. In Culver City, as in Echo Park, as in East Los Angeles, there are the same pastel bungalows. There are the same leggy poinsettia and the same trees of pink and yellow hibiscus. This is wrong, literally, and in what it implies figuratively. I saw how the crowded apartment houses of Koreatown cede abruptly to the 1920s mansions of Larchmont Village in Hancock Park. I had done the disorienting drive down Washington, where the poverty of West Adams drops off at the border of Culver City. I understand where Didion was coming from. Most places in LA are ruled by the same middle-class tract house sensibility. As James Baldwin wrote about South Central Los Angeles in No Name in the Street, Watts looks, at first, like a fine place to raise a child. But he does not lose sight of the fact that the drive from Beverly Hills to Watts and back again is a long and loaded drive. Barbara Grizzuzzi Harrison, in her 1980 Didion takedown, Joan Didion, Only Disconnect, takes issue with a similar sentiment expressed in Didion's novel, The Book of Common Prayer, where the narrator claims that poverty in the fictional American country of Boca Grande is indistinguishable from comfort. We all live in cinder block houses. The eye that sees no difference between the cinder block houses of the poor and the cinder block houses of the rich is a cold, voracious one, Grizzuzzi Harrison writes. It is, furthermore, astigmatic. This voraciousness is encouraged when you are regarding the bungalows of Echo Park in East LA only from the windows of your car. I did not seek out work that described life in neighborhoods that weren't Hollywood or Beverly Hills, and I should have, like Paul Beatty's 1996 novel, The White Boy Shuffle, a hilarious and damning fantasia of black life in West LA, as feverish as the Day of the Locust, but with the Rodney King riots instead of zombified Okies.